All this week, we're looking at privatization in America. Today, we'll talk about efforts to privatize public education through charter schools and voucher programs, which advocates often refer to as school choice. President Trump supports expanding school choice, and in his budget blueprint, he calls for cutting $9.2 billion from the Education Department and for shifting $1.4 billion to expand school choice initiatives. We're joined now by Sam Abrams via Skype. He's the director of the National Center for the Study of Privatization in Education at Columbia University's Teachers College, and he's the author of the book Education and the Commercial Mindset. Sam Abrams, take us back to the beginning of the idea that market forces should shape public education.
We can go back to Milton Friedman with this. He wrote an important essay in 1955 called The Role of Government in Education. And Friedman's argument was that parents should be able to shop for schools in the same way they shop for anything else and use vouchers to do that shopping. And Friedman thought that this would help students in poor neighborhoods escape poor neighborhoods. He specified that the vouchers would be worth a certain amount of money, and private schools could charge more than that specified sum. But his concern fundamentally was improving the quality of education for all children and giving parents more latitude.
And how many more parents have that latitude now? How much has this idea of vouchers caught on around the country?
That's a great question. Milwaukee is the city where this really began. It took a long time to catch on in the United States. So that started in 1990. There are about 28,000 students in Milwaukee. Across the country, we have programs in Cleveland, D.C. We have nearly 100,000 in Florida. And we have quite a few in Arizona now. The number of students using vouchers, however, is not that great. The alternative form of choice has really been charter schools, which were much less controversial in the public eye than vouchers.
And charter schools, by the way, some of them are public schools, right? They're considered public schools.
We can consider all charter schools to be public schools. There's a lot of debate about this, but they're publicly financed, privately managed schools. Some of them are run for profit, about 13% of them. About 7,000 of our schools across the country, of 100,000 publicly financed schools, are charter schools. And of that 7,000, about 750 are run for profit. But they are open to all students through lotteries if oversubscribed. So they can be considered technically public schools.
But you consider charter schools to be part of the privatization of education?
They are part of the privatization of education in that privatization technically means outsourcing the management of a service for the public to a private provider. So in that regard, charter schools constitute a privatized form of the delivery of education.
And advocates of all of this would say this is giving parents more choice. That's the word that is often used, choice in education. What do you say to that?
It does. It does give parents more choice. The big question is, does it provide choice for better education, or is it just a different door that students are going through, but the education isn't necessarily better and sometimes might be inferior than what students would get at their default neighborhood public school?
Does the proliferation of all of these charter schools and voucher programs and the privatization in general of education, does it hurt public schools? Can we look at the research and say this is making the rest of the public schools worse?
There is an argument to be made in that regard, because what we have happening is a certain kind of atomization. The neighborhood isn't the neighborhood that it once was, because you have students crossing school districts to go to different schools. So the community involvement in the neighborhood public school has been lost. Moreover, because we have this sorting of good schools and so-called bad schools, with a lot of the students who can abide by the high academic and behavioral expectations at the demanding charter schools. Then you have students who can't abide by those high academic and behavioral expectations and get concentrated in the default neighborhood public schools. And we do have research that shows that when you have that concentration, they cause problems for other kids.
What about the performance of the kids who are going to the regular public schools versus, let's say, a charter school or a private school? Are we seeing differences, big differences in the performance?
In some particular charter networks, there is a significant difference. You have KIPP, Achievement First, Uncommon Schools, Democracy Prep. These are very well-funded networks. So in some of these cases, we do have some impressive results, but we have to take into consideration that these are networks that work for a subset of students who can abide by these steep academic and behavioral expectations, and these networks have a lot of philanthropic funding to make it possible. In general, however, we don't see any significant difference. Now, in fairness to advocates of choice, however, there is the choice that is necessarily being exercised. So it may not be academic results that they're interested in. It could be just the exercise of choice itself.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Sam Abrams, who's the director of the National Center for the Study of Privatization in Education at Columbia University's Teachers College. And let me ask you about something else, Sam Abrams. What about testing, all the testing that's going on around the country? Is that a part of the privatization in education in America? Because these companies are private, right, that do the testing.
I wouldn't say the testing itself is a product of privatization. This was mandated by the federal government with No Child Left Behind in 2002. And we had a lot of states who were mandating this kind of testing a decade earlier. And you do have these companies who not only benefit from this mandated testing, but they also manufacture need with a lot of benchmark assessments throughout the year to prepare students for these exams. I see the testing, though, as a product not so much of privatization, but of this commercial mindset, and that we like to think of everything in terms of profits and losses. And reading and math scores comport with that vision of how schools work as any aspect of our economy works.
But some people would look at that and say, that's just accountability.
Right. However, there are better ways, I would argue, to get accountability. We can do deep sampling. And in fact, that's what the Finns do. They just sample 10% of ninth grade and a longitudinal sample of students from third grade, sixth grade, ninth grade, and 12th grade in mathematics. And they get terrific evidence of progress. And all of the pressure for accountability that has resulted in this kind of testing has interfered with a school day, and it's crowded out time for instruction in art and music and crafts. We're not even having as much instruction in history and science as we should.
So let's talk about what is going to happen in the future when it comes to privatization in education. Betsy DeVos is the education secretary. She's a big fan of charter schools and vouchers. Let's listen here to her during her confirmation hearing. Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington State, asked DeVos if she could commit that she would not privatize public schools or cut a single penny from public education. Here's what DeVos said.
We acknowledge today that not all schools are working for the students that are assigned to them. And I'm hopeful that we can work together to find common ground and ways that we can solve those issues and empower parents to make choices on behalf of their children that are right for them.
I take that as not being willing to commit to not privatizing public schools or cutting money from education.
Well, I guess I wouldn't characterize it in that way.
Okay.
What do we know at this point about what DeVos actually is going to do on this front?
Well, from her visit to a Catholic school with Donald Trump in Orlando several weeks ago, we know that she's a big fan of tuition tax credits, which become vouchers for poor children. So she can lobby for that. How she can make it happen at the federal level is another question. There isn't that much money in the federal budget for education. So it's a bit of a mystery about how she can really make privatization take that much more hold across the country.
But also, it's probably the case that a lot could happen without her.
Oh, much can happen without her, and that's already happened recently in Arizona. We have a push in Nevada that's in the court system right now about making money available to all parents, regardless of income, so they can send their children to private school. And it may be the case that this will spread to other states. It seems to be the case.
That's Sam Abrams, who is the director of the National Center for the Study of Privatization in Education at Columbia University's Teachers College, part of our series this week on privatization in America. Sam, thank you.
You bet.
And tomorrow we will talk about privatization and the military. Your thoughts, welcome at hereandnow.org.